right, my name is Madeline Burdine. I'm sitting here with Rob Heal at the field office of the Human Rights Campaign of Mississippi in Jackson, Mississippi. We're sitting here, it's about 9:07 a.m. and we're getting started. So Rob, do you mind stating your full name and your preferred gender pronouns?
Yeah, Rob Heal, and my pronouns are he, him, his.
Awesome. So can you tell me a little bit about your motivations for being part of this project?
Well, you know, my story is very open, and you know, I'm kind of well known in Mississippi as a openly gay LGBTQ plus activist or advocate. So, you know, if my story is valuable to somebody, then I want to tell it.
Mm-hmm. So, can you state just right here off the bat what your job is? What do you do?
Well, that's a good question. I was just at the Capitol yesterday, and that's where I spend a lot of time. I was there for the book festival, mm-hmm. Mississippi Book Festival, here in 2023. But I spend time there because I have to mostly fight against bad legislation and lobby, and have to wrangle politicians and, you know, make them speak to me whether they want to or not. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work is on the political side, the policy side, you know. And sometimes, you know, we're not always fighting stuff. We're usually pushing things that are good, like in five cities around the state over the last few years, they've passed fully inclusive, comprehensive non-discrimination protections or ordinances in their city. So, mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, you know, there's positive stuff. And in fact, we, you know, have been working on a hate crime bill that would add sexual orientation and gender identity mm-hmm. and disability to our current state hate crime law. And we have, every year we've had Republican and Democratic sponsors. So mm-hmm. whereas we don't agree on, you know, some issues around LGBTQ plus people, we have been able to agree with Republicans and Democrats that nobody should be hurt
right. And
or killed because of who they are, who they mm-hmm. love. So mm-hmm. so a lot of my work is that. But then it's on the other side, I do a lot of educational work, speaking mm-hmm. to folks at various companies around the state, corporations. You know, in Mississippi, I've been at the largest employers in the state over the last few years. I've been at every one of their pride celebrate their inaugural pride celebrations and the opening of their employee resource groups that are you know LGBTQ plus affinity groups. So you know it's really been you know it's not just the political stuff but also the educational stuff. We're working at institutions like universities where in Mississippi we've been able to work with universities to you know one help them live out or embody a lot of the policies that they put in place, but also to put those policies in place to make sure that they have, you know, non-discrimination policies for students and faculty. So, you know, it's a mixture of a lot of things mm-hmm. I do. It's the institutional work that we do with, like I said, organizations, with companies, with universities. It's the policy stuff that we do on the local level or at the statewide level. And then it's also, you know, the hearts and minds kind of work that we do, the social change that, mm-hmm. that we need. And, you know, one of the, you know, the big investors in that has been, and some people don't know this, but Toyota of Mississippi in Blue Springs, right outside of Tupelo, you know, gave several years ago, over 2 years, gave us $25,000 mm-hmm. to do LGBTQ plus awareness in the Tupelo, Northeast Mississippi area. And so we were able to, you know, to archive, like mm-hmm. you're doing, stories of folks who are LGBTQ plus in that area to help change hearts and minds.
Awesome.
So that's a lot. There's a lot of stuff I do. Yeah. There's a lot.
Well, so I'm aware that you became, or that the HRC opened this office in Mississippi.
We had another office, but this is the second.
Okay, okay. 2014, correct?
2014.
So have you been here that whole
time? Yeah, I started with HRC. Do you want to know why I kind of got into that?
That's exactly what okay. I want to know. Look, you already know what we're doing here. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was a United Methodist minister for mm-hmm. 12 years. Nine of those I spent here in Jackson at Broadmeadow United Methodist Church, which is just north of here where we are right now. And I was, you know, I knew I was gay when I went into the ministry. Mm-hmm. I also knew the policies that the United Methodist Church had in place. So mm-hmm. I had to kind of live very privately around that. But mm-hmm. And so I did. And, you know, I was a confirmed bachelor for a lot of folks. And, mm-hmm. you know, but then as I got to know people in my congregation at Broadmeadow, you know, it was one of those things where I started telling people. Mm-hmm. And you know, so a lot of people in my congregation, as I got to know them, you know, I wanted to be fully known to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would tell my story, but it was always kind of an open secret. And,
mm-hmm.
But then again, I have heard from a lot of people that it really wasn't a secret, that everybody knew that I was gay, and they loved that I was a good pastor. I would visit people, and I was a good preacher and things like that. So they forgave what they really didn't understand because they were, you know, they were glad to have somebody who cared about them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Ryan says, when I tell people that I was a closeted pastor, Ryan, my partner of 15 years, says that you were not closeted. You came out every time you quoted Janet Jackson or Celine Dion in a sermon.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, but you know, but while I really did love being a pastor. Mm-hmm. I loved all of that. But I couldn't be fully me, even though I was out on some level to my congregation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feared on the larger institutional level that I would, you know, one day be caught
mm-hmm.
and brought to trial. And so, so not being able to be fully authentically me, you know, had lots of side effects that I really didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, you know, it just became at some point, while I loved being a pastor and I was, you know, and I was fully, you know, in a partner, in a relationship, but in a committed relationship, you know, gay on so many levels openly, it became duplicitous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked to Ryan one day and I said, let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to do what a lot of folks have, you know, do the brain drain of Mississippi, mm-hmm. get out. And Ryan, I said, put your resume out there. Let's see what happens. And,
mm-hmm.
and Ryan put his resume out in November of 13. And by December he had an offer in New York City
mm-hmm.
to work for, Wall Street Journal. And he works at Trustmark Bank. And so he accepted it initially, and we went up to New York in January and in early February, and we were about to sign the dotted line on an apartment, and Ryan was very nervous about the whole thing because mm-hmm. I really didn't have any prospects
mm-hmm.
in for a job. And he was going to go on up in like April, and I was going to come up in May or June in the United Methodist Church, you're always, you know, July to June.
Right.
So your appointment, I was going to come up after my appointment ended for that year. And we were about to sign the dotted line on this apartment. We looked at each other and said, let's not do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're running. We're doing what a lot of people do. Let's go back to Mississippi and try to make it better for other folks.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, you know, turned down the job, and he had kept his job. And so it put me on a trajectory to find another career.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started, you know, consulting with some friends, and really what I wanted to do is get a desk job, just, you know, quietly kind of move out of the parish setting,
mm-hmm.
keep my credentials, but, you know, just move in with Ryan and be quietly gay and, you know, live our lives. Well, a friend of mine, we were talking, and she said, you know, I have somebody that I know that works with the Human Rights Campaign, and they're thinking about coming down to Mississippi and opening up an office. And said, when she comes up, she's going to come to town, and I want you to go meet with her and another colleague. And I left there. We had talked for an hour before she ever said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Ryan, I said, I'm going to be working for the Human Rights Campaign. And just, it was in that instant that I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was scared to death.
Yeah.
Then in November, it was in October when we had that conversation. In November, I met with them. Sure enough, they came back to me the next week and said, we want you to start working with us on a contract basis, doing some organizing ahead of our office opening up. And I told Ryan about it, and we talked about it, and I wasn't sure because, you know, I knew if I did this, you know, that I could be, you know, I could be outed and it could be dangerous. And so I, you know, so one night, I think in December, I shot up in bed and said, I've got to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if I don't, then I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. Because
mm-hmm.
this is an opportunity, you know, to continue really in ministry, to preach the same thing, love and inclusion. And while I was doing that, so I was kind of, they let me quietly be an organizer from January to June of 2014. And then I applied for the position and got it. And I remember even like the day before I had to go to the Capitol because they wanted to do a press conference to announce my job. And I showed Ryan the speech that somebody had put before me that I had to approve. But I had to say in there that as a gay man, and I was going to say it at the Capitol with every press, no, nothing else was going on that day. So we had every media outlet there. And Ryan just said, "You know, you're outing me. I know, and I'm sorry, but I've got to do this." Because he's like, people are going to know that we're not just good friends. You know, his family has, even though we were out to his sister and brother-in-law for a long time, but he wasn't out to his family. But I said, this is, I got to do it. And I did it. And so anyway, that's a long story, but it really was kind of this, I realized that, I wanted somebody to create change for LGBTQ people. And I was looking for that person, and it turns out I might have been that person. I think that's a lot of times what people find out, that they look for somebody to be the leader, and they find that they are the leader. And I'm not saying I'm the only leader. I'm just, in this position I am. But yeah, I mean, I am among a lot of people. I'm the gay man in Mississippi that meets with politicians and stuff. So yeah, and it's weird. I've always loved politics. And now I'm in politics, but it's a very challenging position to be in Mississippi.
So how did that, it sounds like, your initial intention when you were leaving your appointment as being a pastor was to kind of be quiet about your gayness. And then you're right the opposite of quiet now. I mean, you're literally working towards, how does that feel?
Well, it's a weird thing because my mom, I'd never really come out to her, even though, but in the time that Ryan and I, I guess I was in 13, early 13, that Ryan and I were looking, we're about to sign the dotted line on a place in New York, and my brother had outed me to my mom and said he's leaving because he can't be here in Mississippi as a gay man. And mom was talking to me on the phone, and I was actually in Atlanta because we were on our way to New York, and we had a layover. And she was really harsh about it and said, "Your dad," well, she said, "Your dad and I knew you were gay when you were a kid, and we tried to figure out what we did to cause it." She said, "The only thing we could come up with was we thought that we figured we let you sleep in the bed with us too long as a child." I don't know. That's crazy things that, and she said some other things that were really hurtful that we've gotten over and I've forgiven. But then Ryan and I called her from New York and said, "We're not moving. I'm going to go back and going to serve another year in the church from 13 to 14." And she said, "Okay." She said, "Just make sure he has an enclosed garage so people wouldn't see my car." She wasn't worried about, she didn't, she accepted I was gay, but she just didn't want people to know about it or, and what was the story that she said? And she also said, "And why do you have to go to New York? They all go there." And I came back home to Mississippi and she knew I was, last year as a pastor. And then I finally said about the next time, around a year later, I said, "Mom, I am going to leave the church. I'm going to stay in Mississippi. But I'm going to be working as a civil rights advocate for the LGBTQ community." And she said, "Why don't you go to New York and do that?" So it's this really funny story, but anyway, and so, yeah, I mean, so, there's this whole thing, I think, in Mississippi that, we know gay people, we know LGBTQ people. Unfortunately, we don't know trans people as well as we should. We're working on that. But there's this whole thing about a lot of people just don't talk about it. Or didn't talk about it. One of the really nice things that happened, and people ask me how my family is about it, because I have two older brothers, and I have a sister-in-law and with my middle brother's wife and their two kids. And people ask, "How's your family about this?" And I said, "I don't know how they feel about it." I said, "I don't know, but they're incredibly kind." Mm-hmm. And it didn't come, you know, my mom and I had to really struggle to go through that. But I said, "They're kind." And this past summer, we go to the Neshoba County Fair. Yeah. And we have a cabin. My mom's from Neshoba County. And Ryan always goes with me. He has, at least for the years that we've been out mm-hmm. and together, for the last 10 years at least. But my sister-in-law, who's never really expressed much of, you know, any kind of, you know, affirmation on us being gay, but always been kind. Mm-hmm. Somebody, a cousin of hers, asked Ryan when he came down the stairs, "What's your relation to this family?" And she said, "He's Rob's partner." Mm-hmm. And that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
You know, just because she didn't say, "He's our friend." Mm-hmm. And somebody else has said, "I say, this is Rob's friend." Mm-hmm. She said, "He's his partner." And I was hesitating even to say, well, you know, even in my position as a mm-hmm. openly gay person, you know, on a public level, mm-hmm. was kind of like, I said, "He's with me." And then I stopped and said, "No, he's my partner." Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's my partner.
I think, you know, we see that so often around in Mississippi. Me growing up in Mississippi, I know that too, of this calling them, well, that's their friend or whatever. So,
companion.
How is that for you in terms of, you know, publicly, you have this very public position where you're a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then when it comes to family, a lot of times there's this different persona that we have to put out or something. So it sounds like, you know, maybe you feel like your family might be making, what would you call it, progress? I don't know.
They've made a lot of progress.
Yeah.
At every family significant event, Ryan is always welcome mm-hmm. to come. And Ryan gets presents and stuff like that. So, you know, and my nephews, who I'm really close to, one just graduated from Mississippi State, another one is a junior, they hug Ryan, mm-hmm. you know. And the same is true with his family. I'm very close to Ryan's, I don't say Ryan, I say to our, she's our niece,
mm-hmm.
Meg, and Ryan's Ford, our seventh grade nephew. And then, of course, his sister has a child by our first marriage, and we're close to him too. But anyway, they're in school in Oxford. And mm-hmm. this summer, in fact, I was in, Ryan and I went up for 2 weeks, so I had a sabbatical. So we went to Provincetown, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, very well known as a, you know, a gay mecca, especially mm-hmm. in the summer, summer season. And so we, a friend of ours, let us rent his house, and we invited Ryan's mom and sister and niece to come up. We invited all of them, but, they're the ones who came and, you know, so there Meg is, you know, it's going to be a fifth grader in Oxford. You know, just surrounded in this gay mecca, and we take her to her first ever drag brunch.
Mm.
And so she's given dollars to drag queens and have it. And so is Ryan's mom and his sister. You know, so it is. I mean, it's a weird thing, but you know, it's I don't know about my mom if I'd ever take her to a drag show.
Yeah.
But if she ever wanted to go, I'd take her. But mm-hmm. but it is. I mean, it's people. There is progress that we're being made, and the fact that we're making so much progress mm-hmm. is the reason why we're getting so much pushback right now with mm-hmm. these drag bans mm-hmm. and these book bans and a lot of the bills targeting trans folks, especially trans kids, because you know they're not able to. I mean, on the you know same sex marriage, the vast majority of the country is moved on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to find the places mm-hmm. where they can incite fear and prey on that. And so mm-hmm. that's why we're seeing a lot of this stuff that's targeting the trans community. But the people don't like trans folks. They don't like me either.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I get up really upset when gay people say, "Why can't we just separate from the trans?" We never can separate from the, mm-hmm. the spectrum of the LGBTQ plus community. Because, again, the same people who are targeting trans folks are targeting the whole spectrum
right.
Of the LGBTQ plus population. They're just the most vulnerable of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just trans kids. I mean, you know, over the last few years, and I know I'm kind of going off topic a little
bit,
but, you know, over the last few years, what's been so disturbing is the the murders consistently every year of in Mississippi, right here in the metro area of and beyond of trans black women and of a trans black male, just a year, two years ago. And all of those murders have gone unsolved, except for one that was down in George County, where it was the first ever murder that of a trans person that was prosecuted under the Matthew Shepard, James Byrd Act that added sexual orientation and gender identity to our nation's hate crime law. So it's just, you know, it's, you know, and a lot of people say to me too, they'll say like, it must be hard being a gay man in Mississippi. And I'll say, well, you know, in some places, but you know, if you're a trans kid or a trans black woman, you worry about dying. I worry about being snubbed or being discriminated against in a place of public accommodation or something like that. They worry about dying every day. You know, trans kids are, you know, most likely, or you know, when I talk about dying, it's usually through suicide, unfortunately. Trans women, it's usually because of, you know, through the hands of somebody else, probably somebody that they're dating, you know, or others. But anyway, but it's, you know, it's, there's been progress. Certainly, you know, again, my family's have made progress. You know, they're not going to probably fly a rainbow flag, but we get along, and that's good.
That's great. So I know, so 2014, you're beginning your tenure here. Obviously, 2015, same-sex marriage. In what ways have you seen, you know, the human rights campaign in Mississippi change throughout your tenure here?
Oh, I've seen a lot of change. I mean, when I started with the HRC, we were just LGBT. And then a couple of years later, we were LGBTQ. And then 2 years ago, we were LGBTQ plus. So as far as our what we use, but I've also seen, you know, I think there's you have to be honest about our history. I think a lot of people saw HRC as a rich, white gay man's organization, and some of that is true. And I think that obviously we've had to apologize for some of the what we've contributed to transphobia, even in the among the. To among the whole of the spectrum, you know, and I know for a fact our president, our former president Chad Griffin, did do that, is apologize for that, for not fully embracing the trans community. That's just not the case anymore. I mean, and when I started, when I started, they made sure though that I was that I was fully committed to trans trans rights and the trans community. Over the time I've been here, but I've also seen it just really embody that and become even more diverse as an organization. And so, you know, my colleague in Alabama is a trans black female, and she does great work. So it's been kind of nice to really kind of see this the organization that talks about diversity really embrace it. And again, we didn't get it right for many years. But like any organization or company, or you know, we've worked to one, instill those principles, to live out those principles, like to embody those principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So yes, I've seen that change. You know, and as I'll say this, that you know, the first trans person I ever really met was through HRC when I was started organizing, and I went back to Ron. I said, I met the first trans person, and I wasn't opposed to it. I didn't know people. And that's the case for a lot of people. Yeah. And it's the same. If you get to know people's story, they're not, an anomaly. They're not distant. They're just like you. They just want to be, you know, they want to live their lives. And so, you know, I've really, that's one of the things I didn't necessarily change. I just really became more open, and more fully open. And you know, like this past year, I really struggled because this past legislative session, you know, they passed the trans medical care ban for minors, and that was a bill that we've been able to kill for several years in committee. But this year that became the issue for Republicans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it became like the litmus test for a Republican candidate. And mm-hmm. Delbert Hoseman, unfortunately, allowed that bill to go through because he had a candidate. He had Chris McDaniel challenging him on the right. Mm-hmm. And so he let that bill go through. And I dealt with a lot of mental health issues because I knew how that would affect or impact families in Mississippi. And so, you know, and I had to really deal with that and through, you know, medical care. Mm-hmm. But that's how invested I've become mm-hmm. in trans rights and stuff. So yeah,
definitely. So in your work bio, I read, and you've actually used this term in this interview that we are sitting in right now. It says that you work to change hearts and minds.
Yeah.
In Mississippi. How you mentioned the project in North Mississippi that you kind of did. In what ways do you go about changing the hearts and minds of people in Mississippi?
Well, I always say that, you know, we could, and I not just say this, I've read this, I think that's been, this has been verified, that we don't really change the hearts and minds by, you know, a big, large money campaign, just through telling your story. Mm-hmm. So that's the number one way is by saying, you know, telling your story to folks wherever you are, whether church, work, wherever. But you know, that has been something that we have invested money in over the years. I told you about the Toyota project. Mm-hmm. That was we called that the Love Your Neighbor campaign. Mm-hmm. You know, something that's certainly a maxim that's familiar to, well, certainly in the Christian tradition, but it's, you know, it certainly goes beyond that and expands into, you know, most faith traditions of, you know, this idea of principle of loving your neighbor. So we called that the Loving Your Neighbor campaign, and we tell the stories. And one of the stories we told was of a trans male named Caleb, who lives in Guntown and works at mm-hmm. Toyota, and his wife is Carrie. And he told his story about Toyota embracing him through his transition. He had been, for the large part of his life, a lesbian, mm-hmm. and then finally fully embraced that he was transgender, and his wife embraced it, mm-hmm. and Toyota embraced it, and so with the money that we got from Toyota, we were able to put that commercial that highlighted his story on the local news up there or the local networks, and. Caleb tells the story of coming down to Starkville, where they had a pride, and which that's another story in itself, because that Starkville, you know, wasn't going to allow a pride thing, but they ended up doing it because a lot of us, you know, threatened them and organized to make sure that they did. But Caleb came down to work at our tent, volunteer at our tent, where we sell merchandise that gets us members. Mm-hmm. So that we can get them politically engaged. Mm-hmm. But Caleb tells a story about this kid coming up to him and saying, "Hey, I've seen you on television. I'm transgender too." Mm-hmm. And then they had this conversation. It was like, that was just a really powerful story where, not necessarily around hearts and minds change, but just life change. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows if Caleb's story might have redeemed that kid's life and redirected it. That here's somebody like Caleb who could be successful and live a life here in Mississippi that is authentic, and in a company like Toyota that welcomed him and embraced his transition, and this kid, you know, could do the same, you know, live up, you know, a vibrant life. So that's a story. But I'll tell the earlier story. We invested the first year that we were opening up our office, which was in July of 2014. About September after that, my bosses had two supervisors. They called and said, "We're going to do a campaign. Not asking anybody to vote on anything. We just want to get the conversation started mm-hmm. in Mississippi. Working on social hearts and minds kind of change. Yeah. And we're going to invest in that. And we want to tell people stories." Mm-hmm. And they said, "I want you to find some stories that we can, you know, put on television or put on social media or, you know, highlight through direct mail and on the internet." And they said, we'd like for you to find a mom of gay children or LGBTQ children. We want an African American mom. We want a white mom. And I want you to find them. And they said, we need a preacher. And I think they said preferably Baptist, because we got a lot of Baptists in Mississippi. And they said a firefighter, policeman, or policewoman, or service person, military service person. And they said, find those people for us. We want to. And then I said, I can do it. I'll do it. And I hung up the phone. And I said, oh crap, how am I going to do this? Well, I found all those people. We got Hylas Clark, who was the first African American woman who was elected to the Mississippi legislature. She just was retiring. She's the son. Her son is gay, and we got a lady named Mary Jane Kennedy, who at the time identified as a conservative Republican Christian mom of gay children. I will say this now, 10 years later, she is not conservative. She's still very much a Christian, and, but she's not a Republican anymore. But I like to credit my work on that one. But anyway. When we are a nonpartisan organization, by the way, I just to say that, but we generally get our support from Democrats. But anyway, but Mary Jane, hers was the most compelling, and I would say I would recommend her to you as a mom of three gay sons. She is a powerful story. So she told her story, and we put it on the news. And it's funny because Mary Jane, I'd gone to her and said, will you help me identify some family members or moms like you? And she thought about it, and we thought about it. And I took my supervisor to came down and met with her. He said, "She's the mom we need to tell, who need, we need to highlight." And so she initially agreed to do it. Now, she was a member of Cross Gates Baptist Church, very conservative evangelical church in Brandon. And she said yes. And then she said through email, right about several days before we were going to film her story, she told me no. And she said it like, it pains me to do this. And I wrote her back and said, we are still friends. Don't worry about this. I said, I understand. I said, we're going to need people like you at some point to tell your stories. And I told her about a kid who'd called me. And I wrote her an email. I said, a kid who called me from Nettleton, Mississippi. He said that some boys took him down to the a gay kid took him down to the football field and urinated on him and called him a F word, FAG. And I said, people like him need moms like you to tell your stories so that we can change other moms and dads. And so I said, so please, think about doing that at some point. Well, she wrote me back and said, you're killing me. I'll do it, and I guess I did a little, it was probably a little preacher guilt. And so Mary Jane told her story, and we put it on the news. And what Mary Jane feared was losing her church family and losing friends. And when that ad aired in October of 2014, that's exactly what happened. She got ostracized from her church. She lost friends, but she gained a whole lot of family. And I get emotional telling it because my mom was dealing with this at the same time, just dealing with, me coming out and being openly gay. And she got to see that video, that the Mary Jane story. And I was thinking I wasn't even gonna go home for Christmas in 2014 after I'd come out, left the church, and started in this. But Mary Jane's story, whereas we know that we have data that it changed kind of acceptance that people had in Mississippi. We did polling before and polling after. We ran this in the Jackson Media Market, and my mom got connected to Mary Jane, and so Mary Jane telling her story about wanting, how we've kicked out gay people and LGBTQ people, and the church is where we need to bring people, because we call this campaign the All God's Children campaign. Because, we wanted, again, something we can, in Mississippi, where most people are believing folks or faith folks, that's something that they could agree to. Anyway, Mary Jane not just helped change, and that campaign didn't just help change people's hearts and minds on a statistical level, but there's the anecdotal evidence that we know from stories that we've heard from people. But my own personal story was how my mom, you know, she said, if Mary Jane can do this, you know, I can do this. And they even, they came to a mom, even her, her pastor's wife brought her to a HRC Faith Forum event, and mom got to see Mary Jane and talk to her about, you know, several months later. So anyway, I mean, yes, I mean, the work that we've done in Mississippi has had an impact. We've seen, again, it's, I'm seeing, we're regressing in a lot of ways, but it's the, it's there, it's in the, these folks are in the death throes of this whole, you know, the church. I mean, sadly, I mean, I think in so many ways, the church is struggling to stay, you know, stay alive in Mississippi and in other places. I mean, it's, it, that's no news to anybody. And so, or at least that this evangelical conservative branch, and so you know they're doing everything they can to hold on to past and anyway I can get into that, but anyway, but that is the hearts and minds stuff is just it's really critical because that's the kind of stuff like the reason we're having issues with the Capitol. At the Capitol with the laws or at the or the nation's capital, you know, state capital and nation's capital, is because of the way people feel and what they're hearing in the pulpits. And you know, but it's, again, it's, this is not long lasting. It's these things we're seeing around the country, we're going to defeat it because people's hearts and minds are changing around these issues.
Awesome. So that obviously, as a former United Methodist pastor, I'm going to assume that Christianity has played a role in your life forever, throughout your entire life. So, so can we dig into that? You know, what kind of, what was your relationship like with Christianity growing up?
That's a good question. I we were at church every time the door was open. I grew up in Forest in Scott County. My dad was the public school superintendent there in the city, and prominent in the community. So was my mother, and so we were very active at the United Forest United Methodist Church, and it was my life. I mean, that's what we did. I mean, school, church. We were when my dad died. I told my brother, I said, you know, he was a Bearcat and a Methodist and a Bulldog, and because he went to state, and he was so devoted to this. The Forest High School, and the public schools in Forest, and he was devoted to the church, and so that's kind of the way, you know, I've sort of defined him, and I think that's really, you know, still in so many ways defines me, but yeah, I mean, it was a place that I felt loved, and I felt, you know, nourished in that church. And I mean, I was baptized there as a baby, confirmed there as a teenager, and that's the same church that sent me out and, you know, approved me for ministry and what eventually became ordination into the United Methodist Church. So obviously, you know, there was a draw to that. And as a kid, you know, I didn't know if I wanted to be a preacher, but I liked the idea of it. And it was my freshman year of college that I felt a real call to ministry and to make that my path for education. And it was so, I was so scared about it. It's kind of like the, you know, honestly, kind of like when I was going to join the HRC or something. It's scary because what does that mean? You know, I'm going to have to be good and I'm not good at that. And, but I remember even, you know, Steve, it took me months to tell my parents that that's what I wanted to do. And my dad was really not on board at first. My mom was excited. But then I spoke at church several months later. After my sophomore year, they asked me to speak. And dad heard me. He said, okay, I think you're going to be a preacher. But you know, it's and while I really felt, you know, the irony is that that's the same church that I couldn't, you know, that loved me, that nurtured me, also said you can't be fully, you know, I can't be fully me. So that's the sad thing. It's a kind of a, I call it unrequited love. I mean, you get loved for, you know, and I will say this, not all, a lot of United Methodists are very affirming, you know, but still the structure is the discipline still, you know, is doesn't allow for openly LGBTQ plus clergy or allow same-sex marriages. So yeah, I mean, the church was a huge part of what I did, and it's actually been a very, you know, beneficial thing to this work. I mean, I had connections that I could, you know, rely on. I already was involved in community organizations and stuff like that, but yeah, I mean, it's the, but yeah, I mean, it was, but it's been a very, it's been a very interesting, journey with a lot of wounds because of the church polity and the church structure and the church of the discipline and theology that says that people like me are of sacred worth, but we don't get the same benefits as everybody else. So yeah, it's weird because I always say that the church, you know, was, you know, that was, you know, I was that kid that was the church kid. And, yeah. And then I was the kid that disappointed a lot of people because I came out and left the ministry.
So I know you're in your church clothes right now. These folks can't see you, but so I know you're headed to church right after this interview. So, yeah. So let's transition to like today, right now, you know, your relationship with Christianity. What does that look like? How have you arrived here on your journey?
Okay. Well, you know, when Ryan and I, when I left the church, I said, well, I'm going to find somewhere I can be, you know, authentic. And Ryan and I started visiting the Episcopal Church. And we went, you know, several Sundays because a friend of ours and his wife invited us and we were close to them. And at some point, Ryan just, he said, this service is too long. He grew up Baptist.
Yeah.
And he said, and I don't like drinking after people. No offense to the Episcopals. I mean, I love the Episcopal Church has been wonderful to us. The bishop here in Mississippi has been stood by me at every point. Bishop Brian Sage, who is a wonderful person. He's retiring. But I said, okay, that's fine. Let's, you know, let's just take a break from church. And we did. And people would ask me, you know, like, where are you going now? And I say, I go where every gay goes on Sunday, brunch. So that's what I'm doing. Well, so fast forward to 2017, Northminster Baptist Church got kicked out of the Mississippi Baptist Convention. They had all had a strange relationship with them for many years because they had for, you know, 30 years of ordained women ministers, ordained women deacons. And so they were already kind of like, you know, on the edge. And that's how the church started. They didn't want to be a church that in the late 60s that was, you know, kicking people out, black people specifically, when they came to church and stuff like that. They wanted to be a different kind of church. And so the Sunday after they officially got kicked out, and it was in the paper, I went to church just to say, I just want to, you know, I knew at least one person. I knew several people, but I'd gotten to be friends with Elizabeth Quinn, who's in that church, because she had, back in 2016, when they passed HB 1523, which was the, basically allow clerks to, you know, not sign marriage licenses, you know, it's a lot of things to, you know, that went with that. But we had a lot of, we rallied against that, and I got to know Elizabeth because she was so appalled by it, and she came out, you know, as an ally, you know, in a big way. And anyway, so I knew Elizabeth. And so I told her, I'm going to come and sit with you at church. And I just want to, you know, so I want to go shake Chuck Poole's hand, who was the senior pastor at the time, recently retired. And anyway, so I was sitting there in the service, you know, I was just going to be one and done. And the first hymn was my favorite hymn, Praise to the Lord, the Almighty, the King of Creation, you know. Second hymn was, I think, How Firm a Foundation, one of my other favorite hymns. So, you know, I in the service was so respectful and solemn and quiet and just what I needed. And And I shook Chuck's hand, and oddly, the sermon was just the gospel appointed that day was this the gospel about the there's two the Syrophoenician woman and the what's her, the not the Samaritan, but anyway, it was this woman who was asking for a non-Jew was asking Jesus for a Canaanite woman. Sorry, there's in two different gospels. There's one she's the Syrophoenician, one she's the Canaanite woman. But anyway, but she comes to Jesus asking for healing for her child, and Jesus says, "I'm here for the house of Israel. You know, I cannot give the food to the dogs." Terrible story about Jesus that a lot of people try to, try to change and try to make it. Well, he wasn't really saying she's a dog. No, he was really saying, "You're not a member of the house of Israel. You're not Jewish. You're a member of another." And she says, "Well," and the woman comes back to Jesus. She said, "Well, don't the dogs get the crumbs at least?" And Jesus' mind has changed. And here this woman who was on the outside became on the inside. Or but Jesus realizes initially there is no inside. And basically, that powerful, and I went to Chuck and I said, "That was a very appropriate gospel for today," which they go by the lectionary, which is pointed scripture for the year. But it was this really powerful story right after they got kicked out around Jesus coming to learn that there is no inside, there is no outside, that all are in the realm of the kingdom of God. And so anyway, after that service, I went home and Ryan had not gone with me. And I just said, "I really liked it. I can't be a Baptist though, but I really, really liked that church." I said, "Let's, will you go with me next Sunday?" And he did. And Ryan liked it. And, we went there for about, I guess we went through, we just were attending through 2019. Because I remember telling, this is another thing that I had, that my mother had to come to, because I called my mother after about several months. I said, "Mom, I'm going to church." Because she had said, "Go to the Episcopal church, And I said, "If you're not going to be Methodist, go be Episcopal." Because that was the closest thing. And I said, "Mom, I'm going to church." "And where?" And I said, "Northminster Baptist." She said, "Baptist," because she's a cradle Methodist.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, it's not this. And she really still to this day does not like that I'm going to a Baptist church. But I said, "Mom," she said, "they're going to make you get dunked." And I said, "They won't. That's not their policy. I would not join a church that would accept my baptism as an infant." And that's their policy. They don't. So anyway, Ryan and I went there for a couple of years in 2020, right in December. Ryan actually got a false positive for COVID. And Chuck, our pastor, senior pastor, brought food over and left it outside for, the lepers that we were inside our house during COVID.
Yeah.
He didn't have it. The good news, it was a fault because the real test came back negative. But anyway, I told Ryan, I said, "We're joining the church." And Chuck said, "Well, if I'd have known, if it would have taken food, I would have brought it to you 2 years ago. So we did join the church. And now I'm on a committee, and I'm on the adult education committee. Ryan's on the technology committee. And I don't like that they don't baptize babies, because that's what I like. I tell people that when Chuck, our former pastor who just retired, when he would dedicate the babies, he would kiss them on the head. So I said, that's enough moisture for me to be a baptism. And I don't go there every Sunday. I mean, I'm busy, and that's the nice thing about not. People ask me, "Do you ever want, if the Methodist church changes, will you go back?" And I said, "I might, but I'm not going to be a pastor, because I like having the option on Sundays to not go to church." Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get a Diet Coke. Kind of
yeah,
do you need, do you want one, or do you?
I'm good. Okay. I'm good. Thank you, though. I'm curious. Do you know or spend time with any other Christian queer folks? Are there more in your church, maybe?
It is. Yes, there are. In fact, there are many at Northminster, and people know it. And they have not openly changed their policy around weddings, marriages, and stuff like that. But they've ordained a gay man out of that church just a year and a half ago. They have, openly gay people on as deacons and stuff like that. So You know, and I'm not, I don't go there to push my agenda. I really do go there to really worship and join other people of faith. And Ryan even says that we're people of faith, but he said we're questioning Christians. And I think if you're not a questioning Christian, then your mind's not, you know, open and your heart's not open. But anyway, speaking of church, make sure I'm going to get there on time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 10:30. It's still, though, when among my friends that we're close with, not many of them go to church. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, and very much because they are, because of what the church has said about them and what they heard at church. Mm-hmm. And there's, like I said, a lot, you know, the wounds that exist. So, and even, you know, some friends express, you know, to me, one of my close friends is like, you know, he grew up Catholic. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't even believe in that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I mean, I don't push it on anybody. It's what we do and they know it. But I've had a friend, you know, even though he knew I was a minister, when I told him we were going, I said he wanted to go to lunch one Sunday. I said, we'll be at church at 11:30. Church. And I've said something about church before, and another good friend of mine, you know, you could see it was kind of passive aggressive. He said, "We know you go to church, Rob." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I'll just, you know, there are many queer people of faith, and that's the other thing that I think was really, somebody pointed out to me one time the way we use language, like, you know, we need to bring the queer people and Christians together. We're already Christians. We're already people. We're not just Christianity, but queer people are people of faith, and people are of non-faith. And so there's no such thing as, you know, the Christians and the gays. Mm-hmm. You know, we're right there in there. You know, we are part of the God story in this. You know, like I said, just like the Canaanite woman. You know, we're here. We're queer. Get used to us.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, though, I think queer people of faith really get, especially, I think, Christianity, or certainly not, doesn't just extend to Christianity, but the whole, what Jesus talks so much about around forgiveness. Mm-hmm. We're really good at forgiveness because we've heard so many horrible things, mm-hmm. jokes, things like that, that were directed at us, not directly, because maybe we weren't out, but we've forgiven a lot of people for a lot of really harmful things.
Yeah. I'm curious, where did you first meet other LGBTQ people?
I knew some. I remember when I was at State, they had a LGBT or gay group, and I remember going by the door, mm-hmm. and I wasn't going to go in.
Yeah.
But they were just a very, you know, very much on the margin. Mm-hmm. And I was my time at the Wesley Foundation, the mm-hmm. Methodist, United Methodist Campus Ministry. And the most I came out at Mississippi State was going to the Democratic Club, Young Democrats, which was enough to, you know, kind of be edgy.
Yeah.
But I did not come out to anybody until I was probably in my first year or second year at Duke Divinity School. Mm-hmm. And I told my spiritual, we had to gather in spiritual growth groups when we got there as freshmen in the Divinity School. And I told my spiritual growth group director for the first time to say, I said, I'm gay. And then, you know, I started, you know, getting online, and that was, mm-hmm. I didn't have access to that as a kid or as even, you know, as a college student, really, we didn't have much of that. But so I started, you know, connecting with people but it was all still kind of very much underground.
Yeah.
And at summer of 2000, I've written about this, and I'm writing a memoir, but the summer between between my middle year and my senior year, mm-hmm. I moved to New York for the summer to do a chaplaincy mm-hmm. Unit, and I met this guy I fell in love with, And it really, that's another, that'll take another, you know, hour and a half to tell that story.
Yep.
But it really was a crossroads for me,
mm-hmm.
knowing that I was connected to, committed to Mississippi. And I was also feeling a real connection to this guy I met, a guy named Carlos, airline pilot, who was originally from Venezuela and gorgeous. And he's still a sweet guy. We're Facebook friends. And it's funny because he ended up with a guy named Ryan, and I ended up with a guy named Ryan. So, but anyway, but it was for me a crossroads, you mm-hmm. know. But you know, getting to, you know, so that was I was living in New York City in Chelsea, which at the time was the gayest neighborhood yeah. in the world. So I was going, like I said, this was right before my senior year of Duke. I was going to be going to Mississippi the next summer. I said, I'm going to get this out of my system.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get it out of your system, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, fortunately, you can't get it out. Not unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
Anyway, so that's about the time that I started, you know, mm-hmm. and then, you know, developed a connection. But now, you know, we are, you know, again, Ryan and I, yesterday we were at a pool party with mm-hmm. a whole bunch of queers.
Yeah.
In a good way. Not saying that in a...
that brings me to the next question. I know we got to get you to church here, so we're right at the last couple questions. So pool party with other queers. Where do you spend time with other? Are there any LGBTQ spaces that you frequent in Mississippi specifically?
You know, there weren't many. I mean, mm-hmm. now Jack Myers. I don't know if you've done his story. Jack Myers has been he opened the first gay bar in Mississippi mm-hmm. that we know of. So Jack Myers has been the place that, you know, gay bars have been the safe place for for many years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was why Pulse nightclub shooting massacre was such a, had such an effect on people everywhere. Because, you know, that's our safe space, you know, that's where we go to be us. And
mm-hmm.
and even me as a pastor, I would go to the little JC's. Jack had a little bar not far from here, a few blocks from my church. And
mm-hmm.
about the end of my time there, I was going up there on Sunday nights after
mm-hmm.
church, and Ryan and I would go up there. But so that's kind of been in history, the bar scene has been the place. But I think Ryan has been, my partner Ryan has been very good at like being creative. And he said, we need to do some fun stuff like drag bingo. There'd been no drag bingo.
Mm-hmm.
In Mississippi that we knew of at the mm-hmm. time. And so right down the street from where we are right now, it was where Homewood Suites is, was Que Sera. We called it Gay Sera.
Okay.
It's where Ryan and I met actually for the first time
uh-huh.
after we had chatted for a week. But that's where we held our first drag bingo, and it was huge.
Mm-hmm.
People were hungry for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had other groups like Capital City Pride, they're doing a lot of that kind of stuff, and we still do that. We had another drag bingo just a few weeks ago. We had close to 100 people there,
mm-hmm.
and not just gay people. So the people have been hungry for that kind of stuff, and it's been fun to be openly doing that kind of thing, and offering that to the public.
Mm-hmm.
It's also scary because there's some people that come and protest still.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always, you know, the fear that somebody's going to harm us. But
mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we really for the last 10 years, well, 9 years since we opened, we really did kind of, I think, help inspire people to do that all over the state. They may have been mm-hmm. doing it before we were, but then that's fine. But it's been, I think it has really kind of taken on.
Mm-hmm.
And drag culture's been around for a long right. time. And the fact that it has become so mainstream is, you know, while we're getting this pushback, these crazy mm-hmm. bills about, you know, drag stuff. I mean, I wish they would try to arrest a drag queen, because that's going to be, a drag queen's not going to do, that would probably help drag culture more than anything.
Mm-hmm. So let's wrap up here with, what do you think that most people don't know about queer life in Mississippi but should know?
We're like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're actually smarter and more talented and, you know, I'm kidding, but I do think we contribute so much to the culture in so many ways, educationally, culturally,
mm-hmm.
The arts, things like that.
Yeah.
It's like, if you got rid of gay people, what are you, who's going to provide that? Mm-hmm. Who's going to play the organ? it's like somebody sent me a meme that said, what was it that they said that United Methodist Church is becoming, allow gay marriage and becoming open, and the churches that don't are not going to have very good choirs or something like that. And you know, I don't know. It was a lot better than that, but you know, you can't live without us. Mm-hmm. And we are statistically and percentage wise, there are LGBTQ people, you know, the same percentage as everywhere else, every state in the country.
Yeah.
We're not just relegated to California, New York. We're right here.
Right.
We're your neighbor.
Right.
And we're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So before wrapping up, yeah. is there anything else that maybe you'd like to touch on that I haven't mentioned?
I don't think so. I think I pretty much gave you a lot of stuff
there. All right. Awesome. Well, this is a great interview. Thank you so much for taking the time to participate. And this will conclude the interview.